everyone. Thanks for joining us on another episode of That All Might Be Edified, Discussions on Servant Leadership. I'm Keith Pankow, the host of this podcast, and I have the amazing privilege to be here with Samson Cantu. Samson Cantu is a recently retired Mastery Gunnery Sergeant from the United States Marine Corps. Well, I guess he's not completely retired. He's in his terminal leave, so he's still technically Master Gunnery Sergeant. So Master Guns, we'll call him throughout the episode. 25 years in the Marine Corps and phenomenal career. He's recently accepted an internship at the NASA Space Center to pursue new opportunities in the space industry, which I know he's very excited about. He was born to Manuel and Peggy Cantu, and he's a Texas native and the fourth of six children. In search of challenge, travel, and adventure, he enlisted in the Marines after graduating from Alvin High School. Master Guns Cantu served in all elements of the Marine Air Ground Task Force, including Marine Expeditionary Unit, Special Operations Capable, Sea Duty, aboard the USS Peleliu, multiple deployments to Iraq, as well as special duty as a Marine recruiter and inspector instructor. Samson married his high school sweetheart and has four daughters, and they have an amazing family. They are now living in the Louisiana area, and they're just a wonderful addition to our community. So some assignments that Master Guns has had, he was in Yuma, Arizona, Houston, Texas, Camp Pendleton, California, Kaneohe Bay, Hawaii, Aurora, Colorado, Okinawa, Japan two times, and finally here in New Orleans, Louisiana, where he's settling down to take his exploration up and away into space. So welcome, Master Guns. It's great to have you today.
Hey, thanks, Keith. Glad to be here.
So I had the wonderful privilege to attend Master Guns' retirement ceremony. And in my own military career, I've had the opportunity to work with Marines on several occasions. And the professionalism, the dedication to duty, and just the demeanor of the Marines is something to behold. And I was impressed with the ceremony. I loved it. And you said some things there that I really wanted to open up with, because I was just so impressed with the way you weaved these conversations and these stories of your life into your leadership lessons. So you want to share with us that initial story you shared with what made you want to leave that wonderful town of Alvin, Texas, and join the U.S. Marine Corps?
Sure. I'd love to. I do have a special place in my heart for Alvin, Texas. It'll always be home. I did have an urge to get up and get out, though. And I can still recall that day when the Marines showed up to my high school, as they normally do. And I got in a conversation with the Marine recruiter there, and we agreed on a time to meet. As a young 17-year-old, once that time came, I either forgot or I put it on the back burner, and I didn't think that it was important. So I failed to show up that day. And as a Marine would, he gave me a call right back. He didn't let me off the hook that easy. And so as I'm home doing nothing, the recruiter calls me and he just says, "Hey, Samson, I thought we agreed to an appointment." And I was like, "Oh, yeah, right. We did. And he goes, "Well, you know, what happened?" And I was like, "Well, I'm really just not interested." And he was like, "Well, I understand that." He was like, "But what's more important to me is that you didn't even think to call me. You know, I set some time aside. I was really looking forward to meeting you. And you didn't even think to call me and tell me you weren't going to make it." And so I started feeling bad. And I really did feel bad, because, you know, I don't typically do that to people, but he gave me the guilt trip. I fell for it, but he then followed up with an uppercut, and he says, "Hey, what's more important is that you're a young 17-year-old man. You're about to start your future, and you don't want to start it with broken promises and bad, you know, bad deals gone wrong." And at that point, I was like, "You're right. You know, I need a do-over." And then he says, "Well, one more thing." He goes, "I know your father has taught you better than that." And Keith, when I tell you, that's what really kind of hit home. I was like, "This guy's absolutely right. My dad has taught me better than that." And I can recall in my dad's voice him telling me, "Son, you know, today's world, you're only as good as your handshake and your word. You know, if you can't hold to that, then, you know, no one's going to trust you. No one's going to believe you. No one's going to follow you." I remember those words. And when that recruiter told me those things, I was like, "Wow, you know, this is just like my dad said." So I was pumped up. And of course, the recruiter, you know, I wanted another shot at it. The recruiter obviously gave me another shot at it. And so I showed up, you know, ready to go, ready to face this guy head on and see what it was that he had to offer. And that's really what it was. He was offering me opportunity, and I was looking for opportunity. So it was a great meeting nonetheless. You know, I agreed. I saw tremendous opportunity, saw a way for me to get out of Alvin and just go and explore and start my own path. So that's what led me.
Thanks, Samson. I really love that story for a couple of reasons. One, because we all know that 17-year-old boys or men, young men, whatever we want to call them, don't usually have the best integrity. I think that many 17-year-old young men have probably missed appointments with Marine Corps recruiters, missed other appointments like that. And I think that's a very common thing to happen. And I love a couple of things. I love the way the recruiter challenged you about starting your future, but I also love your response to it, because there's a lot of us 17-year-old boys that would say, I hear you, but still not show up, or be afraid to say no. You say, because maybe it wasn't for you. Maybe you truly weren't interested. It wasn't your path. You know, at that point in time, you got to own it and say, you're right, I messed up, I should have came, but I'm done, and own it at that point. You chose to explore it. And I think there's a power in that. But unfortunately, I think there's a lot of us that wouldn't have that integrity. And we would just say, blow them off, or just not show up. And I love that that foundational piece was part of your journey in the Marine Corps from the beginning, and that you kind of built off it to become a great man of integrity that I know you are. And I know that I watched your dad respond to that story, and I saw him get a chuckle out of it. And I saw how proud he was of you as well, knowing that his lessons not only sunk in, but they were carried forth to a greater degree. It started with that conversation with a Marine and continued to grow from there. So just wonderful stuff, and just love to hear it. And I think that a lot of us can learn from that, learn that when we say we're going to do something, we need to do it. And then secondly, we got to be open to opportunities. As the most recent episode of this podcast, Darren talks about opening ourselves up to opportunities is where we can really explore and find great challenges and things to build us in life. So I just love that. So do you think, as you use that story, that it had a major influence in your path and your growth as a Marine leader?
I absolutely think that. I can tell you, you know, time and time again, checking into new units, meeting new people, you know, you have first impressions, but to me, you have lasting impressions, you know, just about every day. I mean, every time you come in contact with someone and you agree to do something, or, you know, in my line of work, I have a responsibility to get a few things taken care of. I'm in the logistics world, so we usually don't get a pat on the back at all. We usually get the ugly end of the stick when things don't go to plan. So it's very important for me to, you know, the little things. When I tell them, hey, transportation is going to be here at this time, it's important to me to make sure that transportation is there for them. When I tell them, hey, your lodging has been reserved and it's locked on for this many people, it's important for me to follow through on that and make sure what I'm telling them is legit. And that, you know, that way they build their confidence in me. And there's so many little things, you know, hey, someone helps you out, I cannot help but go back to them at the end of the day and say, hey, thanks for your hard work, and really show them. It only takes that little bit to motivate your Marines or your service members. And just thanking them, you know, people, when you show value in people, then, you know, they want to do a better job. They want to make sure that they get that same response from you next time. But time and time again, Keith, I just find it valuable to keep your word and to follow through on what you say. And I can tell that trait, you know, some people aren't born with it. Some people have to work hard on it. But I can tell when other Marines have that, they'll come to me and it might be the smallest thing, but they'll say, hey, Master Guns, I was able to take care of that thing we talked about. And I'm like, wow. Okay, good. You know, and it's a small pebble. It goes a long way, because I know what that guy is capable of doing. I know that he has the same values that I have. I know that it's important for him to complete the job or to complete the mission at hand. And it makes me trust him. And I think he trusts me as well.
Yeah, wonderful thoughts. And, you know, oftentimes, especially in the military, the logistics specialists don't get all the glory, as you mentioned there. So having people that are reliable and trustworthy and that you can speak to and build a good team around, I think is very vital for when you hit those lulls of an organization where you're not necessarily seeing the benefit you're adding, and it can be hard to put in the daily effort day in and day out. But knowing that you have a baseline for yourself will help push through some of those lulls when you're not necessarily feeling the gratitude of the organization, that kind of happens to us in all levels of organizations from time to time. So I just love that. I also, one thing that stood out to me at your retirement ceremony as well, and then we can talk about other things, is I failed to mention that you also have a son-in-law who's also a Marine. And when you did the passing of the flag, Old Glory, as we say it, that happens at all services retirements a lot of times, you had him stand in there. And I thought, what a special representation to have your son-in-law represent that pay grade when you were a Marine to pass the flag towards you in your retirement. I've watched you interact with him. And what I really love is that you treat him like a son, because he's your son-in-law, but you treat him like a son, but I watch you and you also mentor him as well. And oftentimes there's some tension between a father and a son-in-law in a relationship. And I don't necessarily sense that tension. I see someone trying to mold an outstanding young man into a great future man. And I saw that culminating in the ceremony, but as I've watched you two interact, I've seen evidences of that more fully. And I wanted to kind of dwell on that for a minute and see what you do to remove some of that tension and how you see Ryan and grow together.
Yeah. No, thanks. That's a great question. And you know, I could talk about my daughters all day long, you know, and that includes my son-in-law, Ryan. You know, he's married to my oldest daughter, Natalie. And man, I want nothing but the best for that team, you know, Natalie and Ryan. And I don't have sons of my own, but, you know, I do have younger nephews and younger cousins, and I'm just rooting for them. I'm rooting for them at all times to make the right choices and to do the right things and to become upstanding citizens. And, you know, Ryan just falls right into that. Even if he makes a bad decision on a car, you know, I'm like, man, why did you buy that car? You know, why didn't you come and ask me? You know, because I really want to be there and I want to share, you know, my knowledge with him. I want to share even some of the mistakes I may have made or some of the lessons that I've learned. I want to pour all that in to not just Ryan, but most of my service members, all of my service members, if they'll allow it, you know, I want to pour everything I have into them and just make them better men, make them better people, make better citizens. So Ryan, he gets to hear a lot of that from me. You know, I have him over on the weekends and, you know, and it's also good to, you know, like, hey, we're grilling burgers tonight. Guess what? You're on the grill. So I get to kind of task some things to him, but you know, I think he enjoys that. He gets to be part of the team. He cooks dinner for the family that weekend. And I think those are good things to have in our household. And he makes some good burgers. You know, he makes some good steaks as well. But yeah, I want to pour everything I have into that young man. I want him to come to me when he has questions. I want him to trust that what I say to him or what my advice to him is going to be good and something he can trust and he can rely on.
Yeah, I love that. And I can vouch for Ryan's cooking a little bit. I got to attend a crawfish boil, and Ryan, not being from Louisiana, I was a little skeptical. I'll admit it, but he did pretty good. It was tasty. He did his homework. He did some great work. So good job, Ryan. If you listen to this, hats off to you, and I'll come to another crawfish bowl anytime.
Yeah.
And I love that thought that, you know, you talked about pouring your whole heart into him and pouring your whole heart into your people. And I know we've talked a little bit in our preparation about how important teams are to you. And I think I see evidence of how you feel teams are in this mentality of pouring your heart into people and how you build teams. And so how do you connect those two at a larger level? You know, it's easy to pour your heart into your daughters. It's easy to pour your heart into a family member, a son-in-law. How do you take that to the next level and pour your heart into your team members at work and build these amazing teams?
I'm a fan of team sports. I'm a fan of any kind of team activity. You know, I like to say that in my 25 years in the Marine Corps, I've never been alone on a mission. I've always had either a battle buddy with me, or I had, you know, a small squad, you know, 4 to 10 guys, or even up to 1500 guys. I've always been a part of the team. So the whole team mentality is important to me. I was fortunate enough to attend a Air Force Senior NCO Academy in 2015. And while attending this course, we studied team dimensions. And man, I was just so blown away. I absolutely loved the whole team dimensions and studying about teams and what roles do I play in a team. And then as I was learning some of these roles, I could literally see my service members, my Marines. I could see their faces. You know, when you talk about a creator in the team aspect, you know, he's the guy that we all know. He has a great idea for everything, right? That's the creator. And it's important to have those guys because they bring innovation to the team. Without those guys, you know, we're used to doing the same routine over and over again. So we need those creators. And then you'll have an advancer. He's another role. And that guy, he's the one who usually hears a great idea and he jumps on board immediately. And he's like, yeah, that's a great idea. And we can do this. So he likes to advance the idea and support the creator. And then you have the important guys, the naysayers, the one who they usually have a bad attitude. And they always say how things are not going to work. You know, that's not a good idea. And I can see these faces across all of my teams. So I know who plays what role. But those naysayers, they're called refiners. They're important because they help you refine your idea. They tell you how it's going to fail. They tell you where you're going to run into problems. And if you could just get grasp what they're saying and build plans around it, you have a secondary plan, you have a third tertiary plan, and it really helps for that plan to work out. We have executors. Those guys are typically the ones who finish the deal. Yeah, they like the idea. They see it in advance. They fix the problems, and then they just close the deal and make sure that things happen the way they should. You know, and what's important is we play a role in all of these. Just some of our characteristics are more heavy in one of those roles than others, you know. There's a final role, it's called a flexor, and that's what everyone aspires to be. He or she has a little bit of all of those characteristics in their team environment, their team, in their own personal, you know, mindset. So teams is absolutely important to me. And when I join a new unit or when I get a new person, I like to sit down with them and discuss, just like we're doing now, have a conversation with them and get an understanding for their thought process. And I can slowly kind of categorize them as, okay, this guy's a creator, this guy's an advancer, this guy's a refiner. And it really helps me when we are taking on those roles, when we are taking on projects, I know their strengths, you know, I know their weaknesses, and I can plug and play in important positions, and I know when to help them, and I know who to team up with them. So that's why teams are so important to me. That's why I love them and I embrace them. And I try to use it in my everyday dealings with any and everyone, you know, not just service members, but throughout life. So yeah, that's kind of my mindset on team dynamics.
I like it. I've never heard of each of these positions explain the way you explained it. And I'm going to look into it more because I'm fascinated by it. And I really, just in reading some of the things you've sent me over time, I've been thinking about it and looking into it already. And I just am fascinated with these different positions. I've already started to see people I work with and start to understand, okay, yeah, this makes sense to me. And one of the thoughts I had as you were talking is we have our natural place that we'll go on a team that we probably have a majority of the time will exhibit that trait. But every once in a while, you switch up the team dynamics. I might switch from an innovator to the refiner, the naysayer, because I might not feel my place or I might switch it up, right? And so recognizing that we can switch, I think is pretty important because so often we get tunnel vision and we see ourselves and the people around us as single faceted. And really we're multifaceted individuals and that's how we have to help each other grow. And then what really resonated with me and your thoughts on team dynamics is when you say, the flexor, where everybody wants to be every, you know, guy and gal, they want to become this flexor. Well, then that shows me that if I'm a leader and I'm building teams, then I need to help people step outside their comfort zone and move from, if they're always that refiner, how do I help them then become something else or vice versa? And so, you know, trying to be intentional about pulling people into different roles to help them to build their skill set so they can become more of a flexor. And I wondered, do you have any thoughts or ideas about how you can be more intentional about expanding the roles of individuals on your teams?
We love putting people in uncomfortable positions. You know, we almost do it to put them on the spot. You know, this is in the world I come from. We're like, hey, you're leading the brief today. Like, well, that guy didn't build the brief or he didn't, you know, but we're putting him on the spot and letting him work, you know, on his feet. So putting people in uncomfortable positions is good sometimes, you know, especially when we're here, when we're at practice, right? And it's slowly developing them to become a flexor or to become a more well-rounded team player. We like to do a lot of peer-to-peer evaluations. And that's tough because it's easy to sit with a young man and say, hey, here's some of the things you're doing right. Here's some of the things you're wrong. Here's where you need help. But it's tough to do that when you're doing it with a peer because no one likes to be told, hey, you're doing it wrong. You immediately get on the defense and you want to justify why you did it that way. And there's a reason, but it's tough to be able to sit back and just welcome that feedback and take it as constructive criticism and, you know, fine tune your own practice. So putting people in uncomfortable positions, allowing them to fail, allowing them to succeed. You know, some people don't know that they're good at these things, but putting them in those positions where they haven't done it all the time, you give them practice, that really starts to develop them. We used to do a weekly brief, you know, just to wrap up how the week went. And my NCOs, the E4s and E5s, you know, that's the backbone of our Marine Corps, right? And I like to challenge those guys. I mean, even when I was a young E2, E3, the NCOs were the backbone. Now that I'm an E9, those NCOs are still the backbone. So I don't allow my NCOs to sit back and take a back seat when we're doing these briefs. I'm like, hey, you have to come with something every week. You have Marines looking at you, Marines that are senior and junior to you. They're looking at you to see how you're going to lead the next project or to see how the week went, or if you ran into a problem, how did you overcome it? So I demand, or I highly encourage my NCOs to bring something to the meeting on Fridays. Don't just take a seat. It's really easy to say, hey, nothing to pass. You know, that's too easy. And I say demand, highly encourage my Marines, my NCOs to bring it, come prepared. And it keeps them in tune with what's going on throughout the week, keeps them engaged with the different missions that are happening, keeps them engaged with productivity and learning about their own Marines. So yeah, so putting them in uncomfortable positions, giving them a chance to fail and encouraging them, I think that's a way you make folks flexors.
Yeah, I like that thought. And for all of you listening that don't have a strong military background, NCOs is non-commissioned officers. I point that out for a couple of reasons. One, so you know what it is. And it's really the backbone of most of our military services in the United States. And as I've done some international work, I've realized that it's a unique feature of the military in the United States. Not all the militaries around the world have this enlisted leadership proficiency that we build intentionally in the United States. And I think it's phenomenal. You know, a lot of these families come from rural communities or working class families, and we educate them and we really help them surpass limitations or boundaries they may have grew up in, or cultural norms that they may have experienced. And, you know, they may come from multi-generational poverty, and we help give them the skills to get out of it and even lead others. And it's really a phenomenal thing in the United States military that I've witnessed that just doesn't have too many peers in other militaries around the world. It's not completely unique to the United States, but it is somewhat. And so I point that out because I really think that there's some value in talking about the advantages of the military for those of us that grew up in a very limited environment. And either we were limited culturally, or we are limited by resources, or we are limited by educational opportunities, or we are limited by all the different things that we can see limitations. For me, and I know many others, enlisted in the military helped me gain the skills to become a true leader and to surpass my limitations. And I eventually accepted a commission in the Coast Guard. And so I went from the non-commissioned officer ranks to the commissioned officer ranks. And so there's value in this NCO level that Samson's talking about that I think is can be lost on those of us that don't experience this life. And I wanted to highlight it and bring it out a little bit out into the open, because I think there's ways to do this that Samson talked about in all organizations. There's ways to create this leadership within our organizations that's not the normal hierarchical leadership. It empowers people, like Samson talked about. He talked about putting people in these uncomfortable situations, putting people in front of people to brief them when they might not be that leader naturally or who your organization thinks. And I think as you build these opportunities in, these are the ways that we create more equity in our organizations. These are the ways that we surpass historical discrimination, how we surpass all these different things that have been problems in our country, and we can expand it out even more. And I really wanted to talk a little bit more and get Samson's input on this discussion about uncomfortable situations, because, you know, we know in leadership, we talk about three different levels. We talk about the comfort zone, the growth zone, and the panic zone. And so many people are afraid to leave the comfort zone because it's what we know. And then so many people are afraid of the growth zone because they're too afraid they're just going to go straight to the panic zone. And so how do you target your Marines or anybody to build leadership opportunities to get them into that growth zone and also give them the comfort to know they're not going to go to the panic zone?
Wow. Well, Keith, you mentioned something earlier that I failed to mention. Education is a huge part of that. Education is so important. We have professional military education at all levels, at all ranks, really starting from the E3 on up. And I have been fortunate enough to be able to attend all of these education, professional military education schools. And I didn't want to go to any of them. As a young, comfortable, you know, Marine, I was happy just doing what I was doing. But it was leaders that I came across that says, hey, you're an E4 now. Guess what? You need to go to your E4 professional military education. And that alone was taking me out of my comfort zone. I didn't want to, and I was in my groove. I was in my routine. I didn't want to change anything up. But allowing me the opportunity to go and serve alongside nothing but other E4s and get an understanding for what they do at their job, you know, how they cope with situations, you know, how they talk to their junior and senior Marines or leaders, if you will. So the education piece to that, the professional military education, that's one way that we get after putting Marines in those positions to improve themselves, to go out of their comfort zone and really measure yourself up against your peers and to look in the mirror and say, hey, you know, I'm not doing too well in this area. I need to improve. And that's one thing that took away from each and every one of these leadership courses was, how can I improve? You know, how can I make myself a better Marine, a better person, you know, a better husband, better father? It's by going and receiving education and studying these things and reading some of these books and applying them into your own life and your own skills and honing in on those skills. So I think that's how we get after it, is through professional military education.
Yeah, I love this idea of education. And I love, you know, how you reference professional military education, because a lot of times that doesn't come with a full course load, right? It's one maybe course or one curriculum or 2 to 4 weeks, or there's different ways to do education. And it doesn't have to be a formal degree plan education. There can be correspondence courses. There can be distant learning now. There can be the degree path. If you go to any of the degree paths, associates, bachelor, master's, doctorate level, any of those can help you. But there's also ways to get an education by surrounding yourself with people that will help you grow and learn. And so I love this idea of professional military education, because oftentimes it comes with opportunities to practice these things. And there's a more practical application of it as opposed to just book learning. And I think that's so important to leadership, is that we need to put people in this situation where they can practice these concepts so they can learn from them and see, oh, this doesn't necessarily fit my natural style, but I see the value in this idea. So how do I get it to fit in my own style, my own character? And so such value. And I think too often when we talk about education or training, we can put blinders on to training or education we've previously had. And what I've been learning in my doctorate program is we should be asking ourselves, what's not working and how can I make it work? And then you gear the education, the training, the learning, the assistance around that. What's not working and how do I get it to work? And as we ask better questions, that's when we can get real learning as opposed to just information. And I just love that idea. And I know that you referenced going to the Air Force Senior NCO Academy. It's widely recognized by all the services. So it's a great opportunity to go to that. And I'd just love to kind of hear your thoughts on what they did there that you thought was impactful to help you learn to be a better leader.
Yeah. So I'm a U.S. Marine. I absolutely love being a U.S. Marine. And once again, given the opportunity to go to this the Senior NCO Academy, I didn't want to go to the Air Force Academy. I wanted to go to my own. But my Sergeant Major at the time says, no, you've been selected to go to this Air Force one. And so I kind of went kicking and screaming, but I went. And I'm here to tell you, Keith, we have the best United States Air Force in the entire world, or should I just say Air Force in the world? We have the best Army in the world. You know, we have the best Navy. And I became a believer when I attended the school. I was one of four Marines out of a class of 300 airmen. And man, you know, they really embraced the four Marines that, you know, they divided us up amongst the different flights. And we got to learn a lot from our sister service. And I know they learned from each and every one of us that attended. But some of the things that they do, they absolutely do things that, you know, it made me kind of say, man, I wish I had joined the Air Force when I was younger, you know? So it opened up those opportunities. Education, I think they are top notch when it comes to supporting their airmen for education. You know, they make it a requirement. And out of a small group of 12 of us that were in our flight, the instructor says, hey, who here has a degree? And, you know, 8 of them raised their hand. You know, it's like, wow, 8 of these 12 airmen have degrees. And then he kind of whittled down who and got to a master's. 6 of them had master's degree out of 12. That's 50% just in my little flight alone. And I was like, man, the Air Force is really doing something right. They are pushing education on their airmen, and the airmen are eating it up. And so I was impressed by that. Bringing in these contracted instructors, I guess, to teach some of these courses like the adaptive and innovative inventory, 4 lenses, all these things that we don't typically learn in the Marine Corps or in the service. They were bringing in these outside agencies to teach us. And I thought that was pretty cool because, you know, who doesn't want to learn a little bit more about themselves and where we fit on a team or how we think. So I really thought that was great that they extended and they reached out, you know, they're resourceful and they brought in these other entities to come into the academy and teach. I remember one particular time we're out on a run, go figure, the Air Force goes out on runs too. So we're out jogging around and one of their staff members, I mean, he was a licensed personal trainer. And as we were going on this run, he was explaining to us what's happening in our body. You know, he explained what long distance run does to us, what short distance running does to us, how it affects our cardiovascular. And, you know, he was telling us what different muscles. So as I'm going on this run, I'm being educated, you know, what my body is feeling, what my body's doing. And not to say anything bad about my Marine Corps PT program. We just go out on runs. You know, you just run until it's done and that's it. But I just think the Air Force was really doing it right when they embrace, you know, education and they feed that to all their airmen and any student that comes in. And they also had a handful of allied forces there as well. So there's, you know, there's some Spanish guys there. There's some soldiers from Hungary, and there was just a number of other different nations that were there. We had to learn from them as well. So it's a really, really great experience.
That's wonderful. And I imagine that there's a value in just the fact that you were seeing a different perspective, as always learning from Marines. Now you're learning from airmen, and you referenced they brought in even contractors. So you even got a separate outside influence in your leadership as well. And I think that diversity is so powerful if we really embrace it, not from a counting numbers of how diverse we are or trying to show diversity, but actually embracing diversity and all the different backgrounds we come from, and even the different organizations we've grown up through. Hardly anybody works in the same organization for their entire life in today's world. And so people came from not only their home cultural influences and their ethnic influences, but they also have their organizational influences as well. And so the more that we integrate those and talk about those and look at those as part of those team dynamics you talked about, not just those different positions, but also the influences of each of the team members, I think that's when we really get to that point where that refiner can do even more for us, can show us how to make these plans even bigger and better, because we're truly embracing the gift of diversity.
I love it. I love it. As I said earlier, the refiners often get this bad attitude, but really, if you understand what their role is and how that young service member, how his mind operates, now you can embrace it. Now you can use what comes natural to him and bolster up your team. Right now, I have a picture of many refiners, you know, from my unit or from my section, and I see value in them. Whereas before, I may have saw them as, hey, that dude had a bad attitude and, you know, kind of avoid that guy. But now it's like, no, we need him on this team, you know, so I can find value in all of them.
I like that. And before you presented this idea to me, I would have to say that I was guilty of seeing the naysayers in only a negative light and not viewing this word refiner changes. It's a flip of the script, if you will. It changes the whole way we talk about them. You know, words matter. That definition is so much more powerful, refiner versus naysayer. And I'm going to use that language from now on. And I think that comes down to, you look at these advancers, and if you have an advancer in your organization, they can see that, and you give them the right motivation, the right tools, and you put them together in the right way, they can take that negative, that refining information, and they can take it even further, right? And so that's why understanding people and how to get them to work together, because oftentimes these personalities can create tension and conflict. And so I imagine that flexure is really valuable to navigate through that tension and to really kind of pull the pieces together. And that's just what we need more in this world. We need more people that can navigate through the tension that comes up from our diverse backgrounds, and not just our team dynamics, but all the things that we bring to the table, so that we can actually benefit from our differences and the way we see the world. Because we don't, just because we see the world differently doesn't mean we have to be destructive. You know, you said a word earlier that I thought about ever since someone like you changed the way I view naysaying and refining through this conversation. They changed the way I viewed constructive criticism. And they said they think that we try to mask things in constructive criticism. We try to use this terminology like it's beneficial, but what we're really trying to do is we're trying to break down a barrier. We're trying to break down a bad habit. So we really are trying to destruct, not construct. We're trying to destruct something when we criticize. And so when we say constructive criticism, it's kind of a misrepresentation. And that's why it's so hard for us a lot of times to take in. And never, they said, but in order to make it constructive, you have to destruct, then construct. And it's too often we try to just say it's one process, but it's two. And that's kind of changed the way I see things. And I know you had a great mentor and a gunnery sergeant. And one of the things you pointed out was how he just was good at, you know, bringing the best out of people. And I thought about him as I was kind of thinking about this thought of destructing then constructing. And so I was curious if you had some thoughts about him or maybe how to do that even better.
Sure. Yeah. Gunnery Sergeant Brian Savant. He was actually at my retirement ceremony. He's now retired Master Guns, Brian Savant. Man, I love that guy, you know? And I think the way I see him, I wish, and I hope that some of my Marines see me that way. I met Brian when I was a young sergeant. I came off recruiting duty and I went to Oceanside, California. And I was a part of 1st Battalion, 11th Marines, an artillery unit. And I was excited just to be in the artillery, you know, regiment. And Bryant was our logistics chief. So I kind of fell under him. And just his complete positive and winning attitude in every situation, it really changed my mind about the Marine Corps, you know, to be honest with you. I mean, we're Marines. We join for many different reasons, but I can almost guarantee you very few of us love going to the field for 30 days. You know, who wants to go and sit in the desert for 30 days? But, you know, Brian Savant, he made that 30 days not so hard. You know, he made it almost enjoyable. And I might say he kind of made it feel like a camp out, you know, with all the boys. And I can just recall him, the importance that he would make our preparation. And he would, you know, call us all by, you know, last names. Hey, Cantu, Pupo, Spidey, I need you guys to go down to the motor pool and do X, Y, and Z and get us ready for next week. You know, so he had this, come on, let's go, like rallying up the team. And then he would just task us. He would tell us why. This is why we need to do it, because when we're out there, you're going to want A, B, and C. You know, and so he would just break it down for us. And then, like any good leader, he would follow up. Hey, did you go down to the motor pool? Did you check on both of our vehicles? Did you make sure that we had X, Y, and Z? You know, did you make sure the vehicle's running, you know, oil, all that? And we're like, yeah, we did. He's all right, well, you know, so he just basically brought that team mentality. And I thought it was really cool. He was like, hey, I'm bringing out an ice chest. He goes, I brought some venison that I got from my last hunt. I'm going to bring it out. We're going to cook it while we're out there, you know, and so we don't have to eat the chow hall food or whatever. So he made it feel like a really great event, you know? So it wasn't just 30 days in the desert. I mean, we got to do some cool stuff while we're out there. We got to train together. We got to learn about one another. But more importantly, that cohesion was there. And we knew we had a big brother like Brian Savant, who was always there to help us out and guide us in the right direction. And in the field, I mean, there's some things we messed up, and Brian wouldn't, he would let us know we messed up. You know, he would kind of say, hey, you really screwed this up. You should have did this instead of that, or you should have came to me and, or I warned you about this, you know, but in a matter of minutes, he was onto something else and he'd pick us right up. He wouldn't dwell on our failures. He would let us know he was disappointed. And I think that kind of hurt more, because we're like, man, we let him down. And that made me not want to let him down again. You know, I was like, man, how can I recover from this? I need to try harder. You know, Gunny Savant goes out of his way to take care of us. I want to take care of him. And so I think just seeing his interactions, his attitude, his positive momentum, that is someone I aspired to be like. I was like, man, I want my Marines to see me the way I saw Gunny Savant. And when we get ready to go somewhere, whether it's to 30 days in the desert or whether it's to a 7 or 8 month deployment on ship or in Iraq, I wanted my Marines to know that I was there and that I had their back and that they could trust me and that I could trust them. So I think he really changed my aspect on the Marine Corps in general and just how, you know, what type of leader I wanted to be.
I love that. And I love the way that he let you know when you weren't measuring up to his expectations, but then clarified his expectations as well. And I think so often when we go to give constructive criticism, what we really should be focusing on is how we can help someone know they didn't meet our expectations and clarify our expectations again, because they might surprise us with how they meet our expectations. But too often we try to give them our version of how we'd meet our expectations. And I think there's so much power in doing something simple and direct like that and just letting them know, look, you're not measuring up. This is the standard. This is the expectation. And then let people surprise you. And so that's my invitation this week. As you go about working with the people you work with, whether you're a leader or you're aspiring leader, you know, or even in your own family, look at how do you approach the people around you when they do something that you might not like or it doesn't resonate with you? Do you give them an example of how you would do it? Or do you give them a clear definition of what the standard is and how they didn't meet it? And so think about that and then try your hardest to stop giving people your way of solving problems and give them the opportunity to surprise you by showing them they didn't meet the expectation and then clarifying the expectation and letting them go from there. And I think you'll see some powerful examples.
That's huge, Keith. I'm glad you brought that up. I have personally witnessed that. You know, I sometimes struggle to pass that on to my Marines about it, you know, perspective, just perspective in general. The way I want things done isn't necessarily the only way to get things done. And oftentimes, you know, my service members are smart and innovative, and they say, hey, we got that done in half the time, or we got that done and we also did A, B, and C. So getting things done is the mission, not getting things done my way. You know, so I really appreciate you throwing that out there.
Thanks, Master Guns. All right, well, we're pretty much done here. So now's the time to share your final parting shots with those that might be listening. So what do you have to say to close us out today?
You know, perspective is huge to me. I think once I understood perspective, that made me a better, more genuine leader. Not trying to solve problems my way, but understanding what my Marines and service members were going through and trying to really look at it from their perspective. And once I started to do that for myself and for those around me, it really gave me a more understanding or better understanding. It made me feel like a better leader. You know, I could cope with them. I could understand where they were coming from. And I think that's probably made me some lasting relationships by doing that. Yeah. So there you go. Perspective.
Thanks so much. And I'll be thinking about my own perspective, and I look forward to learning even more from you. And we'll definitely have to have you on again down the road. And thanks all you for listening to another episode of That All Might Be Edified, Discussions on Servant Leadership. And have a wonderful day.